Welcome back. Our guest this week is Republican Upper Peninsula lawmaker Representative Beau LaFave, who's not too happy with the state attorney general over Pipeline 5. But our lead story is the governor's got a civil rights problem in Benton Harbor. And on the OTR panel, we have Zach Gorchow, Lauren Gibbons, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs, with nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors. Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. Governor Whitmer has got a problem in Benton Harbor, Zach.
She does. She is under a lot of criticism from some natural allies in Benton Harbor over her proposal, almost ultimatum, that the school district suspend operations of its high school because of the financial crisis there, as well as academic performance. The mayor of Benton Harbor, a number of community leaders, and other Democrats held a news conference outside of her office in Lansing this week that was scorching. She was likened to Rick Snyder, which, coming from fellow Democrats, is fighting words, to say the least.
They said it was a third term of Rick Snyder.
Yes. The words sellout were used. This was framed as Gretchen Whitmer has betrayed us.
Treating our kids like refugees.
Yes.
And it got worse.
Yeah, it was really hardcore stuff, and you can tell that this is one that, you know, the governor's administration, they know the path they want to be on, but I think they're also realizing there's a lot of heat here.
Let's point out that we are taping on Thursday this week. This all could come to a head on Friday. What's your take here, Lauren?
You know, I think this is a really tough pickle for the governor to be in because, you know, at the end of the day, yes, the school district is in a lot of debt, but to close a high school is really detrimental to a community, and that's what a lot of these Benton Harbor officials are arguing. And, you know, to have these Democrats come out and say these fighting words, a lot of progressives are coming out on Benton Harbor's side here. The administration has a lot of work to do before tomorrow if that's when they do come to a conclusion.
The word busing was not used, but this was reminiscent of taking black children and spreading them out over the rest of the land into these other schools where, quote, they don't know about our kids and stuff like that. William?
It's interesting. There have been other high schools and school districts in trouble like this. Remember Kalkaska?
Yeah.
Before Proposal A in the early 90s, they closed the school down before the end of the year. They were out of money. Buena Vista had terrible problems up near Saginaw. We were just discussing before the program, Albion basically has been dissolved, and they've parceled out all the students to Marshall, I think. So, I mean, this isn't unique, but there is a long history in Benton Harbor and St. Joe, those two communities, cheek by jowl. St. Joe, affluent, heavily white. Benton Harbor, poor, 80% African American. And so there is a lot of emotion down there.
The mayor and others raised an interesting point, Zach. They say the high school sits on 40 acres of prime property, and there's huge development going on around this. And their assertion was that perhaps if we bulldoze down that high school, we could make a little money on this acreage.
I mean, that was a big theme of that news conference. The governor's office has said that is just absolutely not true, that the school district will retain ownership of the property. No one's coming in to seize the property. They've said, obviously, if that were to happen, there'd be nowhere to hide, and the administration would have to answer it for it. But right now, the governor's office is saying, We think you should suspend the high school. Maybe once you get the finances in order, years down the road, you can bring back the high school. I think that might be a little bit unlikely. You know, once you take out the high school, you can ask the folks in Albion. They now don't have a district anymore. It is sort of the symbol of the community. But the idea that there's some property grab going on, there's just no evidence of that.
You have to wonder, what did the school district, did the local officials, were they given a heads up that this was coming? You know, you call somebody and say, you know, I'm going to maybe propose closing your high school. What do you all think about that? Did that go on?
You know, I think even if it did happen, even if somebody said, hey, we're going to close the high school, I mean, even if you have a heads up in that situation, it's still pretty...
but it gives you an opportunity for the other side to say, don't go there. Yeah, that's going to be a problem if you do.
When you're $16 million in debt,
18.
And 18 build up over a number of years, this was a disaster waiting to happen. Everybody had to realize that.
I mean, look, the Benton Harbor, it appears when the answer from the Benton Harbor folks is cut us a check or forgive the $18 million in debt. They have borrowed money from the state through the school bond loan fund. Now, one could argue the state maybe set them up to fail with a lot of loans that were structured to do interest-only payments. Well, now, what a shock. They can't afford to pay down the principal. That said, the debt is out there, and there has to be some way to deal with it. I mean, there's not going to be really an audience to just simply forgive the debt. Of course, they could point to the Detroit public schools, which, you know, there was, I think, some 600, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that the state, you know, helped to do.
The grand bargain.
Yeah,
right. There hasn't been much appetite in the legislature to bail out these school districts with a lot of debt. So I think, you know, that even if the administration was amicable to, you know, working with Benton Harbor on this issue, I think you'd face a tough time in the legislature.
Well, is this a canary in the coal mine for another educational funding crisis, like Kalkaska was back before Proposal A? I don't see that. I kind of agree with what you're saying. I don't think the state or the legislature seems to have much appetite for either bailing out Benton Harbor anymore or moving with some major push like the governor calling for 500 plus extra million dollars for K-12 education.
She said she was looking for a swift and bold action. That's how she described the decision.
Well, she's not necessarily positive.
Yeah. I mean, the problem for her is that to a lot of Democrats, this looks like emergency manager light. That you don't have an emergency manager involved, but when you talk about closing down a school, when you talk about the state essentially pulling the strings, there may not be an emergency manager there, but it does feel like you have an outsider calling the shots, even if perhaps this is the only path.
All right, they're talking about women's rights, the right to vote. Here's what the governor had to say about that this week. Let's take a look. Women dressed in white marched for the right to vote after being denied that right for years in this country. And finally, 100 years ago, they got the right through the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Currently, there is a record 53 women now serving in the Michigan House and Senate. But backers of the women's movement, while celebrating this day, argue the job is not finished.
And it's undeniable that we have not yet reached the full extent of equality for women. And even today, working women are still being paid less for the same work as their male co-workers. We're seeing attacks on women's reproductive rights throughout the nation and right here in our own state.
Recent polling data suggests that female voters are not pleased with President Donald Trump. 54% of the women in outstate Michigan disapprove of him, and 67% of the women in Metro Detroit oppose the president, leading Governor Whitmer to predict that women will influence the outcome of the next presidential race.
I think that smart women will decide who the president of the United States is going to be, Tim. We're going to see historic turnout in this next election, and we're going to see women voting in record numbers.
Governor Whitmer points to the last race for governor when her opponent repeatedly compared her to Jennifer Granholm.
When that ceases to happen, I'll say that we've really achieved equality, but we've got a lot of work to do.
The battle for women's rights continues. There is no doubt about it that women do have a voice in this election, do they not?
Absolutely. I think that it can't be understated, the impact of women in this election. You saw in 2018 when in Michigan and throughout the country, women really came out in full force. And you saw in Nevada, actually, it's a majority female legislature now, which is a first. Yes, yes. And in Michigan, you know, we saw a full Democratic slate of women get elected at the administrative level. So I think 2020, you can't understate the importance of women in the election.
There's no signs that the energy and motivation among Democratic women, independent women, soft Republican women has abated since the 2018 cycle, with one exception, which is in the Democratic presidential race, where so far Joe Biden and seems to be holding his own in the lead, but it's still so early, and it appears Elizabeth Warren is starting to make a move. So it's going to be interesting to see if that presidential race follows the same path. But you know, we keep seeing women winning Democratic primaries and head-to-head races against men. And, you know, each election cycle tends to have its own unique dynamic, but, you know, there's no sign that the dynamic involving President Trump and Democratic, independent, and soft Republican women has altered.
Tim, I'll just say that for the first half century after women got the right to vote, I would say women generally voted a little more conservative than men did. It started to change about half a century ago. Remember 1992 was the year of the woman, they called it. It wasn't quite the great year that a lot of people thought. It kind of plateaued, but I think in the last decade, in the half decade, women have really come on, and it's tilted slightly to the left now. You're getting more aggression and activism among Democratic women and the liberal side of the spectrum, and women as a bloc vote more liberal and more Democratic than men do.
I would also just interject a little bit, because even on the, you know, on both the Democratic and Republican side, you're seeing a lot more women feeling comfortable stepping forward and running for office. I think regardless of party, women are more empowered than they have right. been in past decades to actually, you know, if they disagree with who is in office, they can step up and run. And that is, you know, that's not a Democratic thing. That's not a Republican thing. That is just a, you know, women coming into their own.
In my inbox this week, Women for Trump. Women for Trump formed in Michigan.
Look at Northern Michigan, which historically has mostly elected men. Most of the Northern Lower Peninsula is now represented by Republican women.
Yep. All right. Quickly, the bridge in Detroit. What are the Republicans doing with that?
Well, they're trying to find extra money, Tim, without raising taxes. Okay, and they're trying to sell maybe the Blue Water Bridge and welcome centers and rail spurs. And now they're saying, you know what? Even if Canada is paying us back for the money we're spending on the Gordie Howe Bridge, maybe we shouldn't spend it at all to begin with. We want to see some bills. They're trying to cobble together $1 billion in tax-free new revenue for Fix the Damn Roads. That's what they're
trying
to do.
Have they heard that the business community sort of supports this bridge? Have they heard? Or did I get that story wrong?
What more do they want? Do they want, like, Wayne Gretzky's DNA to be donated from Canada at this point? I mean, Canada
and a future draft choice.
Right. Canada's paying for the entire bridge. Yes, Michigan is fronting some money, but this... this just seems like a silly move.
This is approaching, if it doesn't cross the silly line, okay? They may be doing this for just the publicity to show, by gosh, we're in there fighting hard, and, you know, Canada ought to write us a check before the fact. I get that. But at some point, you have to step back and say, come on, this is not going to happen.
I think this is really early in the budget process, where a lot of times, you know, this is the time to air your wish lists, yep. right? I mean, I think that this definitely falls into the wish list category. I have a hard time believing that the entire Michigan legislature and the governor will sign off on changing something that's already started construction and that Canada is paying for.
Rick Snyder will come back on his white horse and ride into town to make sure that doesn't happen.
The appropriations chair, Shane Hernandez, a Republican, basically, he didn't laugh at it, but you read the quote,
yes.
He was laughing. He said, well, you know, boilerplate language, you know, what do you want to make of it? It was just, you know, clear that
Canada
it seems to be...
Well, that's the risk yeah. here, is that it begins to look like it's not responsible.
Canada probably feels like no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah. Even if they win the national basketball championship, right? Let's call it a guy from the UP, eh?
Republican Representative Beau LaFave was elected to the Michigan House in 2017, but he began his political career in 2012 as an intern at the Dickerson County Republican Party. The Ironwood lawmaker holds his law degree from Wayne State and a BA degree from MSU. He chairs the House Military and Homeland Security Committee.
So how's everything in the UP, Rep?
It's wonderful. The snow is gone. We're glad to have sunshine.
Just last week it left, right?
Well, in some areas, yeah.
There you go. Lauren's got first points.
Representative, you've been a big supporter of gun rights throughout your time in the legislature. Talk about your strategy now that there's a Democrat in the governor's office.
Well, I think it's really important that we recognize that Article 1, Section 6 of the Michigan Constitution says everyone has the right to keep and bear arms for the defense of himself and the state. So, that being said, I need to make sure that we can get bills across the finish line. My goal right now, and guns, and as well as everything else, is criminal justice reform and making sure we can right-size the criminal offenses, even though I don't agree with some of them. Some of them I think are unconstitutional. If we can pare those down a little bit, that would be good for all people.
Representative, what about school districts up in your district, like Iron Mountain, Kingsford, Escanaba, Menominee? Are they in bad shape? What about Benton Harbor? How do you look at that situation? Could that happen in your area?
I think in our area, if worst case scenario were to happen, we would be having to look at consolidation. We're not there. We're very responsible with our budgets. Fortunately, we're going to get $180 per pupil of an increase this year in the budget for Upper Michigan schools. So I think that we're in good shape. But we always need to be concerned about consolidation and things like that.
Dana Nessel, you like her?
She is my attorney general.
And?
She is my attorney general.
Attorney general, you said, might benefit from the state psychiatric hospital.
I did say that.
Is there anything she's done?
Oh, wait a minute. I mean, that was a pretty astonishing thing to say. I mean, a lot of people say that was, you know, out of bounds, insulting. Can you respond to that?
If the attorney general felt insulted by that, then I do apologize.
Okay. So how
Why did you say it?
Well, I thought it was the right thing to say at the time. And I think that our attorney general is doing things that seems to me to be silly. You guys were talking about the bridge and Canada paying for it and how it seemed silly what the Republicans were doing in the legislature. Canada's paying for a $500 million tunnel to be built with union labor, and the attorney general is trying to stop it and turn off propane for 200,000 UP residents and more than that below the bridge. That's silly.
She is trying to avoid a catastrophic spill in the Straits of Mackinac.
See, that's a great talking point. But in the meantime, with her silly lawsuit, we're leaving Enbridge Line 5 on the bottom of the Straits of Mackinac. It won't go anywhere because it's under a federal easement. The courts are going to throw out her lawsuit in the end anyway. And all we're doing is delaying the tunnel that's going to be more protecting of the environment.
So she's irresponsible.
That is irresponsible.
So you don't think that the state will have the legal, even though the DNR granted an easement to the predecessor of Enbridge for the land where the bottom of the Straits floor where Line 5 sits, you don't think the state has the authority to revoke that and effectively start the shutdown of the pipeline?
I don't think so, no.
So what is your answer, though, to the concerns that 5 years of the line sitting on the floor is just too risky, that after this tugboat apparently dragged its anchor the entire duration of the Great Lakes and hit the line, damaged the line, fortunately it didn't break the line, that it's just too long? How do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, suing Enbridge over building the construction during the peak construction season is going to make it take even longer to build it. So that argument kind of goes away. And I'm a bit concerned. Everybody keeps talking about this tugboat dragging and hitting the line. Nobody mentions that it ripped out ATC's transmission lines and spilled thousands of gallons of toxic chemicals into the lake. But nobody wants to talk about that because the transmission lines aren't nearly as scary as Pipeline 5 is. Thousands of gallons of toxic chemicals leaked into the lake, and the attorney general and nobody else says anything about it. Because the goal is not to protect the environment. It is to appease political leftists in southern Michigan and make them feel as though we're doing things to protect the environment.
Granted, there's certainly environmental types across the state who are upset about Line 5, but if you go into the, northern Lower Peninsula or even southern UP, there are a lot of, you'll see get rid of Line 5 signs. Those are not uncommon to see. Isn't there some local unrest about the pipeline?
10-1, it's build the tunnel in the Upper Peninsula with signs right now. There's not very many people that have actually studied the issue that think we should shut down Pipeline 5. We did a study in 2007. Radical environmentalists were involved, and that's good, wanted their opinion. They did 6 alternatives to Line 5. And they said unequivocally, none of those are going to work. You'd need 2,000 semi-trucks a day to get propane into the UP. How is that going to help our roads? I'm not sure. You could do 800 rail cars, but it takes almost 8 hours to unload one rail car. and we don't have the infrastructure up there anyway. So the safest way to do it is by a pipeline. You're not going to use a tugboat because those crash. So we need the line, and it is irresponsible to try to shut
it
down.
To zero out her budget, you said.
I did.
Take all of her money away.
Well, I think 270 full-time lawyers is a little bit excessive. And when you're wasting the state's resources on suing over a very silly legal argument, it seems as though they might have too many lawyers in there with too much time on their hands.
Auto insurance rate reform, you finally got it across the finish line.
We did.
Is there any buyer's remorse about that in the legislature right now?
You were on the committee that drafted that stuff.
Any blowback from interest groups that make you feel maybe we didn't get it quite right or we're going to have to revisit this?
I think the biggest buyer's remorse is when I went back to the district and I said, it's going to happen in July next year. And everybody said, why is it taking so long? I said, well, because the governor wouldn't let me do it any quicker. So everybody was thrilled that we got it done back home. Everybody's excited that the average UP family can save $1,000 a year. But they're really upset that the governor negotiated it to 14 months instead of the three that I voted for.
Guy, the Republican leader, signed off on it.
Well, sometimes.
Why is it just her fault?
Because the Republicans voted to fix it in 3 months, the governor said no and moved it to 14.
The Republicans could have said, we're not going to do it, Governor.
Then we would never have rate reform.
Do you still feel as though Dana Nessel is being unfair to Catholics?
I do.
And why?
Well, Chief Judge Talbot is a great example of, instead of going after the judge because of his career or his tenure, she went after him after his Catholic faith and tied his ability to do his job to the religion that he holds. If you did that to any other religion, there'd be national outcry. But because it was to Catholics, not very many people really cared.
Are you comfortable with Donald Trump?
I am.
They love him up in the UP?
He's doing a very good job for Michigan.
If you were running for Congress, however, on the other side of the state, some people say maybe you don't want to hook your wagon to him.
I don't know what that's like.
What does that
I've
mean?
Never run for Congress on the other side of the state.
Well, do you think he is a liability for some Republicans?
I think there are some people that are a little bit upset with his brashness. But if you look at the tax cuts, you look at the economy, you look at the deal we just negotiated with Mexico to help stem the unfettered flow of illegal immigration from southern countries, we're getting good deals for our country. We didn't have to spend a bunch of money on this problem. We threatened tariffs and Mexico blinked. We need to get a trade deal with China. It's really important. They're stealing our trade secrets. They're stealing tons of intellectual property from our companies and our great people. And we need to protect those trade secrets and we need to get good trade deals.
Will he win Michigan in 2020?
Yeah, go ahead.
Will he win Michigan again in 2020?
I think he will win Michigan in 2020.
Representative, what about fix the damn roads? What are the Republican majorities in the House and Senate?
That's a great question. The Republicans in the House have $800 million of new money that's going to be going directly into the roads without a ridiculous 45-cent gas tax increase.
Would you take a 20-cent gas tax?
Absolutely not.
15?
No.
10?
No.
Zero?
Yes.
Well, the governor, wait a minute, she needs something from you.
The governor is not the Speaker of the House. She's not an elected member of the House or Senate. She does not control the budget. She can sign things, but she does not get to write line items.
Do you want to get rid of Larry Inman?
I think Larry Inman, my good colleague, I liked him. He's a nice guy. He does need to resign.
He's not been convicted of a thing.
He has been indicted, and the evidence is out there, and you can take that for what it's worth. I've seen the text messages. They do not look good, and I think that for the betterment of the institution, he needs to resign.
He has not been convicted.
He has not been convicted.
Do you reject the idea that there's a need for $2.5 billion more per year for roads? Because the plan you're coming up with is going to fall well short of that.
Yeah, we're not going to raise $2.5 billion of taxes and only spend $1.9 billion on the roads like the governor wants. So, no, I don't think we need $2.5 billion of new revenue. And if we did, I'm not sure why the governor is only going to do a 45-cent gas tax increase. And I'd like to point out, only one penny of it goes to the Upper Peninsula. So you're going to raise taxes on all northern Michigan across the entire state and only give one penny of it back to rural Michigan? That's never going to fly.
Well, there's a lot of people downstate who would say, "No, wait a second, with the way the funding formula is, the UP, northern Michigan, you're doing just fine. You're probably, you're getting what you need, and it's down here where we're getting hosed."
Well, you say that to the residents in Iron Mountain and Escanaba and the city streets that really need to be fixed up there. If folks are willing to give up toilet paper and use plastic instead, I could consider defunding UP roads. But where do we think those trees come from to make toilet
Put
paper?
Put your Homeland Security hat on. Do you think the Ruskies will invade our elections in 2020?
I don't think they invaded our election last time. They did the same thing that we do in all the other elections, to try to influence and mess with everybody's confidence. But they didn't hack the election. They didn't break
into
voting machines.
Counties in Florida, two of them.
Yeah, they didn't break into voting machines, and people chose the president they wanted, and that was President Donald J. Trump.
All right, so you're comfortable that Michigan has its act together, that there will be no Russian interference, or from anybody else for that matter?
Yeah, I don't think the Canadians are going to be breaking into our elections, even though they're really close by.
And you believe the Secretary of State then?
What was that?
The Secretary of State, is she on top of this?
I'm sure that our new Secretary of State is doing everything she can to protect our elections, and I have utmost confidence that when the people decide who to pick as president, that will be the decision, and it will be Donald Trump.
So I just want to go back. Even let's take that $1.9 billion for roads. You're still, the Republican plan still doesn't hit that. So that means, won't the roads just keep getting worse, even with all the new money you're looking at?
We just put the biggest funding increase in Michigan history last year, and dumped a ton of money into roads. Yes, roads are in bad shape. They need to be fixed. The Republicans have been doing that.
What are you going to run for after this?
I don't know. I might go finish my law degree.
Okay. Good to see you.
Thanks for showing up. Thank you guys
very much. All right. See you guys. Thanks very much. See you next week right here on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.